Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by the skipper of this podcast, our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, I think it's good to be here, too, because we've skipped a couple days in between our recording sessions there, more than usual.
That's right. We had a week hiatus.
Well, with my trip to D.C., I went down and saw the Pirates play the Washington Nationals, saw two out of the four games down there, and your travel schedule, we were a little busy schedules the last couple weeks.
Yeah, things didn't line up last week for us, but we are back in the saddle here today.
Much like this trade deadline, things were not aligning last week.
Yes. How apropos. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better lead in there.
Transition. So, the non-waiver trade deadline wraps up this Wednesday at 4. So far, Matt Garza has been the biggest name moved. How do you think this trade season is going to end up shaping up?
I have to say, I am ecstatic that the Indians did not trade for Matt Garza, first of all. Second of all, I think it is going to land with a giant thud at 4:01 p.m. on Wednesday. I don't think much of anything is going to happen. There's too many teams who still think they're in it, and too many teams who are trying to get way too much for what they have. I saw that the Mets are demanding a Zach Wheeler-like prospect for Bobby Parnell.
Oh, yeah, that seems like a sound investment.
It's just like, no wonder you're not getting any calls. I mean, it just seems like that's the going rate, you know, for some of these guys, and it's just absurd.
Yeah, they figured out that it's a lot easier to control a player for 6 years at $500,000 than it is to go out and sign a big-name free agent for $25 million, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
It only took the industry a few years to catch up to that, but now... Now that they understand it, boy, makes trading trickier.
Watch out. Yeah, I think the other thing, you know, is the new collective bargaining agreement changed the way the compensation pick is attached to a free agent player.
Exactly.
If the player is traded during the season, no one gets a compensation pick. He doesn't – the team that had him for most of the year doesn't get a pick. The team that trades for him doesn't get a pick. The only person that's going to benefit in that case is the player if he gets traded, because then when he becomes a free agent, I don't think anything's attached to him anymore.
Right. Yeah, kind of like my senior prom night. Everybody left dissatisfied at the end, and that's kind of what happens now. There's just no happy ending after those half-season rentals anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, which is probably good, because we've had a discussion about how the half-season rental doesn't really pan out most of the time. But, you know, with the two wild cards, you know, more teams think they're in it. And if you're really not in it, maybe if you're that bad, maybe it's just a good idea to keep that player and use that pick. That pick is actually really valuable, that sandwich pick that comes at the end of the first round.
Right, yeah.
If you have a really deep draft, that's basically a second first-round pick.
Yeah, and it absolutely makes sense, especially if you are investing a lot of money in those areas up front, you know, kind of like Pittsburgh has been doing more recently with the scouting. If you've done your homework, those picks are incredibly valuable.
Right. And on that point, you know, a few weeks ago, they had the competitive balance lottery. And I think the Indians and the Pirates both got a pick in that. I read from one source that the Indians pick because that next year's draft is expected to be deep. That pick, that competitive balance pick, is basically graded out as an A prospect.
Wow.
If you're going to trade that pick, like that's like trading Francisco Lindor.
Yeah. Jeez.
So
yeah, that'll definitely.
That's the thing, you know, so those picks are really valuable. And as you said, teams are realizing that more and more as they have wasted them for the last 10 years.
Right, yeah. I mean, now you're seeing they're holding on to those. They're valuing them a lot more. Well, enough of the trade talk. Let's move on to today's goings on. We're going to be talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates a little bit. After that, we'll be touching on what's going on in Cleveland. We're going to give a quick shout-out to the Erie Seawolves, and I'm going to be hopping on my soapbox about something that I've been thinking about a lot the last couple days. So we'll get to our soapbox at the end. Well, let's kick it off with the Pittsburgh Pirates and what's been going on in Pittsburgh. The first thing I want to talk about was the Gerrit Cole, Jose Fernandez start. I don't know if you were able to see any of that yesterday. I was actually in the car coming home from Washington, D.C., so I had to listen to it on the radio. But Jose Fernandez.
I was driving home as well, so I didn't see it.
Yeah, and then you didn't get to see any of it either?
No.
I went back and actually I watched the highlights, so I just had an idea of what it looked like. And Jose Fernandez was everything that he was billed to be against us. He struck out 13 batters yesterday against Pittsburgh, it's been an ongoing problem in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's striking out 13 Pirates isn't like striking out 13 Cardinals. But it's
not the accomplishment, some would think. But yeah, it's
for a 20-year-old kid, he's doing all right for himself. I'll give him that. So
right.
But Gerrit Cole, his counterpart on the mound there, he threw 7 innings, struck out 8 batters, happened to make one mistake to Giancarlo Stanton that kind of cost him the game. The Marlins and Pirates it was a close game, finished 3-2. Sishek came in at the end and shut it down. And basically that one mistake to Giancarlo Stanton kind of haunted him. And when he made that mistake to Giancarlo, all I could think about was there was a pitcher that was telling a story, and his name's escaping me, but he was talking to Steve Carlton. And he was asking Carlton, how do you do it at this age? This was in Carlton's towards the end of his career. And he said, how do you just keep continuing to be effective as you get older? And Carlton said, basically, I go through the lineup once. And after that, there's 2 or 3 people in that lineup that I don't pitch to at all. I just pitch around them, and I'm going to let everyone else beat me. And that was what I kind of thought when I was looking at that Miami lineup, that pitch around Stanton. And let everybody else beat you. Why not? I don't. Right. What are you worried? Justin Ruggiano and his 188 batting average is going to beat you? Like, take the bat out of his hands and let somebody else beat you.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I'm a big proponent of that strategy, even against good teams. It's like the old walking Barry Bonds with the bases loaded strategy.
Yeah,
I think that was a good decision.
Oh, absolutely. It's crazy to say that there was a point in time where it was a better decision to walk Barry Bonds with the bases loaded than pitch to him.
Right.
But
and it's tough with the Tigers because they have Prince Fielder, of course, but there is times where, especially this year, it's just Miguel Cabrera is so out of this world. There's times where it's just like no, just walk Miguel Cabrera, and you just sometimes got to take your chances with Prince Fielder.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes 100% sense. Let someone else beat you. Don't let the best hitter on the team, the guy that's hitting 350, sniffing a batting title again. Yeah. Don't let him beat you. But that was, I like I said, I didn't get to actually watch the game. It was just everything that I heard. And saw in the highlights. But the Pirates are back at it again tonight, actually. As of our recording right now, they're in the middle of a game against the Cards. They're up actually 9-1 right now. So I'm feeling pretty good about this one in the bottom of the eighth. I feel like it'd be really hard to cough this one up. And it's funny because I wrote an article today about the Pirates run production and how they've, struggled to score runs. And tonight they go out and plate 4 in the first inning.
Right. But of course,
that's, You've got to wonder, when Pittsburgh's scoring under 4 runs a game, how are they going to continue to win games like this? And I really firmly believe you need nights like this just to give everybody a break. Liriano went 7, Pittsburgh scored 9. It was a pretty low-pressure game for the most part. You can kind of take a deep breath, and you're not under just that constant stress of wondering how you're going to scrape out the next run.
Right.
And that's that's how this whole series is going to be. This is the biggest series, clearly, up until this point in the season for the Pirates right now, playing the team that they're 1.5 games back in the division. They have Vic Black up in the bullpen now. They're showing him our our AAA call up from Indy. He's a lot of fun to watch too. He's really kind of herky jerky, and you know, you just know he's slinging the ball when he's up there. I feel much more comfortable with him in a 9-1 game than I do in like a 4-2 game, but he's fun to watch. We had some other things going on. Michael McHenry actually was placed on the DL today, and they recalled Alex Presley. This kind of, I think, brings into question where Tony Sanchez, I think, is going to fit on Pittsburgh's roster. You know, this season, the knock on him up until this season, I should say, was his offense. You know, he hadn't really put together a whole season where everything had clicked. And this season, it was kind of, you know, the offense was there and everything was clicking for him down in AAA, but he was having problems throwing the ball. And they were saying, you know, he even had the yips where he couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher sometimes. So I think this will be a good chance for Tony Sanchez to kind of show, hey, look, I'm ready to be here next year from the start of the season. And after that, you know, Russell Martin's contract's up, so let's see what we've got. I think Sanchez is going to have a good opportunity to prove he's that guy that could fill in that void. So I'll definitely be keeping a close eye on him and the at-bats that he gets in the time that he's up here. I think if he performs well enough, he could take that gig right from McHenry, because he's been completely underwhelming this season in just about every aspect of the game.
Right, and it's interesting because it seems like, you know, how often are you watching teams during their playoff runs in October and they have that guy who came up around the All-Star break and stole a backup job, or, you know, it started as a backup job and became a starting job or became a rotation, and they're really playing a big role in pushing that team through the playoffs. Tony Sanchez, like you said, he has that ability here with, you know, Michael McHenry definitely underwhelming all year. Kind of the way that his Drubal Cabrera came on the scene in 2007. You know, yeah. No one knows who this guy is, but all of a sudden he's providing a really valuable service to his team in the middle of a playoff run. It always seems like there's one or two of those guys. Maybe this is, you know, Tony Sanchez's turn to fill that role.
Yeah. I mean, I firmly believe that he's going to get every chance to keep that spot once McHenry's healthy. So I don't know. I'll be keeping a close eye on him over the next couple of days and how Pittsburgh uses him and what he does with his time while he's up in Pittsburgh. So the Shark Tank is down its great white, Jason Greeley.
Yeah. Today,
he vowed that he would be back before the end of the season.
Oh boy.
Now, and he's actually right as soon as his ears must have been burning. He's right on Root Sports right now with a little interview. I'll have to go back and rewind that. But I feel like if an injury were going to happen to an integral cog in the Pittsburgh Pirates, I'm glad it wasn't Andrew McCutchen or Pedro Alvarez, because I feel like, and then that kind of pains me to say that, Pedro Alvarez, but as much as I ragged on him the last year and a half, 2 years, but he's super important to the success of this team and, you know, obviously an invaluable resource at the back end of games, but he gets hurt. And Mark Melanson, right there at the end of games, we really don't miss a beat with Melanson in there.
Right.
You know, and I'm glad that it doesn't seem like it's going to be the Tommy John route, because the second that happened, you know, you hear that forearm tightness, you just, you know, you crap your pants, you're worried about what it's going to, you know, it's going to be Tommy John.
Yeah.
So for it hopefully just to be a strain, I think that's great. But, you know, like I said, we have Melanson now at the end of games, who's been exceptional this season as well. Justin Wilson, our bullpen was a huge strength. So I feel like if we were going to lose anyone on our team, that has been important. At least it was a position where we can kind of fill him in and not miss too much of a step. So that was kind of a relief, at least that, you know, hey, his forearm is you know, it's just a strain or whatever they're classifying it as now. And if you want to read the particulars about it, Dr. Garrett actually wrote a fantastic article that we have posted on the website. So go check it out.
Yeah, That was amazing work by Dr. Garrett on that. You definitely should check that out.
Yeah, give it a read. But like I said, I feel like we can manage without Greeley. I feel like there are other players that we can't manage without, but Greeley, you know, I think we can get by until he comes back, if he does come back this season.
I agree with that. I think that's definitely the right way to look at it. It is always interesting when one of those lockdown guys at the back of the bullpen gets hurt, how everyone responds when they all get bumped down the line.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that they won't respond well. It can be a little nerve-wracking, even if you have a deep bullpen. You know, all of a sudden, somebody that's used to pitching in the sixth inning is pitching in the seventh, and the guy who's pitching in the seventh, now he's in the eighth.
And, yeah, exactly.
It kind of can fool you. It's easy when you lose just one arm out of a really nice bullpen to all of a sudden, when one person's hurt and then maybe one person starts to struggle, all of a sudden things get completely out of whack. But I do think...
Is that speaking from experience as an Indians fan?
Maybe. You know, but... I mean, it does happen. I think the Pirates have the depth to overcome it, although it's definitely a big blow to lose grilled cheese, and hopefully he is back before the end of the year.
Yeah, and speaking of bullpens, Vic Black just came on and threw a 96-mile-an-hour. Oh, just a blazing fastball there. So hopefully he can shut this game down in the ninth for us with an 8-run lead.
Hopefully they don't go all Texas Rangers on you.
Yeah. So, this was according to Travis Sochik of the Pittsburgh Tribune. Clint Hurdle filled out a wish list for general manager Neil Huntington.
I find the wording of this a little disturbing.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Hurdle's quote was that he had to prioritize what he thought would make them stronger. He said whether it was position player, starting pitcher, bullpen, or bench player, those are the four quadrants. We are working off a sheet. We had a list of names, and he had me prioritize. So I thought it was kind of interesting how they broke up their trade targets into those four quadrants. They're looking at, and that's an interesting way to break it up. I've never really thought about it like that: pitcher, bullpen, bench player, or position player.
Right.
And then he, based on the list that they had, he prioritized what he would want. Now, I know as a Pirates fan, if I was prioritizing what was on a wish list, and God, I would love a peek at that list just to see whose names were on it. Just to see. Oh, I just snap a little picture with my phone and show everybody.
I think you have a pretty good idea what's on the list.
Well, I know the name that I would want on the top of that list. We'll get to that in a second, too. But
oh, boy. I have to interrupt you.
Yes.
The Giambino with the walk-off solo home run in the ninth just won it for the Indians.
Wow. Take me back to 2005.
Pinch hitting for the ever-struggling since May, which we'll get to, Mark Reynolds.
Oh, that's probably a good pinch hit right there.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Congratulations on that. Yeah. Well, I know, like I was saying about the Pirates' wish list, what would be on the top of my wish list would be would be on top of everyone's wish list for the Pirates, which is an impact bat.
Sure.
You know, the Pirates are struggling to score runs. I wrote about that in the article tonight. One of the biggest problems that they're having is swinging and missing, just making contact with the baseball. Put someone in there that's going to make good contact. If I were looking at that wish list, I would hope the name that would be on top of there would be Giancarlo Stanton. Call every day about him. You know, offer up your two best prospects and two other guys, whatever you need to get those 3 years of control with Giancarlo. It sounds like from everything I'm reading, that's Miami's really holding tight with Stanton.
Wait a minute. Didn't you a few weeks ago say no?
The more and more that I watch this happen every day in and day out with the Pirates, the more and more I want that bat. I don't think I would want it if it were going to be, and this is the deciding factor for me. If you're going to make a trade, don't trade for a guy like Alex Rios. Don't give away one good prospect to bring in a guy like Alex Rios. I would rather go all in And Giancarlo Stanton, the tipping point is the fact that he's controllable for 3 years of arbitration.
Right. No, I agree.
And instead of going for a player like Nate Schierholz, and obviously you're not going to give up anywhere near as much to get Nate Schierholz, sure. But do you really think Nate Schierholz is going to solve your problem? No. If you're going to make a trade, I think you should make a trade that's really going to impact the Pirates lineup.
I agree. I agree with that theory. Thing is, while the control, the 3 years of control that comes with Stanton is what is drawing you to him, you're going to have to give up just a treasure full of riches. Because in 3 years with guys like Jose Fernandez, Christian Yelich, Jacob Turner, Giancarlo Stanton, Marlins might not be awful.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they're the one franchise that's shown that they can completely disassemble a team and then reload.
Right. I mean, we're talking about trading. We're talking about a trade deadline where Mike Olt, who, yes, has lost some of his luster, but Mike Olt gets traded for 2 months of Matt Garza.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm fine with Pittsburgh standing pat. And I've said this from the beginning. Neil Huntington seems to have a plan. I think he's doing a great job with the farm system. He's got the farm system built up to one of the best in the league. So I'm fine with them not making a move and sticking to the plan that they have. But if you're going to make a move, if you're going to bring someone in to try and fill that void in right field or first base or wherever it is that you want to fill that offensive void, I say just do it right. Bring in someone that's actually going to make an impact. Don't bring in another Garrett Jones or a Gabby Sanchez or a player of that caliber that's really not going to make that big of a difference in our lineup.
No, and I understand that, but I mean, I guess I'm just saying, I'm just trying to get you on record of, you know, Talion, Polanco, Heredia, at least two of those, plus someone else for Stanton, and you're down with that?
If they did it, I wouldn't be angry. And the original, the idea that was posed, I believe it was by Dave Schoenfeld, was Gregory Polanco, Jameson Taillon, Tony Sanchez, and another arm is the type of package you're going to have to put together. And if you get Giancarlo Stanton and then another, you know, low-A prospect back in that deal, I say if you pull the trigger, I'm not going to be angry about it.
All right. We're just getting you on record because this is this is the shift here.
Yep. It is. I should say I don't necessarily want them to do it. I'm indifferent on whether they do it or not, but if you're going to trade, I say make a trade that's actually going to help you get better. Don't make a lateral trade. Don't give up prospects to bring in Nate Schierholz or Alex Rios. You know, Alex Rios is going to cost a ton of money next year. So Chicago had better be eating some of that salary if you're going to be making a move like that. That's my mindset.
Right.
And I think the more and more that I read and the more that you hear about it, it doesn't seem like Pittsburgh is going to make that big splash. You know, so yes, I'm fine with Pittsburgh's direction that they're going in. I would be okay with them making that trade to bring in that impact bat. I wouldn't be angered by it.
All right.
But that's all pure speculation, and from, like I said, from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like Giancarlo Stanton's going anywhere. So,
well, this headline I just pulled up is that the Rangers are calling every week.
Yep, keep calling. Persistence is worth something in life, I guess. Last couple things I wanted to touch on before we get to the Tribe, just some of the goings on in the minor leagues. Alex Dickerson. He's an outfielder in Altoona. He was also on our top 20 prospects going into the year. Has had a phenomenal week last week. He was named the Eastern League Player of the Week. His triple slash was 400, 419, 733 across seven games. He was 12 for 30. He had four doubles, two home runs, 13 RBI, highlighted by a 3-for-6 night this past Friday where he drove in eight runs. He just, Woo! It was off the chart. It was, I would have loved to have been at that game to see that. That would have been kind of a neat thing to see. He tied a record, I believe, I think it was with Alex Presley, had the record of eight runs driven in prior to that. So,
all right.
Tyler Glasnow, he continues to deal in West Virginia. He actually threw tonight, Glasnow did, for the power against the Delmarva Shorebirds.
Yeah.
So Glasnow threw five innings. He struck out six. He walked two. He's having an amazing season. Going into tonight, he'd thrown 87 and a third, struck out 122. That's part of the other reason why, and that was why I wanted to get to Glasnow tonight. When you have a guy that makes a leap like this, if that leap is legitimate and this progress is real, you know, you can go from trading Jameson Taillon and not really taking that far of a step backwards in your organization down on the farm if you have a guy like Glasnow who's taking a step forward like this.
Right.
So his progress is definitely something to keep an eye on for the Pirates as well, because it affords the Pirates a little more flexibility when they know they have pieces like that down there. Andrew Lambeau, he's AAA Indy. He hit his 27th home run tonight. Lambeau's having a fantastic season as well for the Pirates. He started out the year in AA, was promoted about halfway through the season, and he's having a phenomenal season for the Indians as well since he's been promoted. He's hitting .284 on the year going into tonight with a .357 on base and a .586 slugging percentage. He's walking about 10% of the time, striking out, you know, at about 27% of the time as well, which is a little high, but, you know, it's not awful. So Lambeau's been having a great year for the Pirates as well down on the farm. So he's another player just to keep an eye on. So, and the last thing I wanted to report, which I thought was kind of funny, and it kind of plays into the trade deadline craziness. Campbell Sprawl the other day, he writes for the Pirates website, Rum Bunter. And he happened to go down to the Bradenton Marauders game. And while he was down in Bradenton, he tweeted out that the Pirates shortstop prospect, Alan Hansen, had been removed from the game.
Yeah.
Well, immediately,
a firestorm began.
It was crazy. All of a sudden, everybody starts tweeting about it. And I believe Campbell, and I want to give him credit for this, because he was the first person I saw that tweeted it out. So I believe he was the first person to note this. But he noted how Hansen was pulled out of the game in the middle of the game uncharacteristically. He was hugging people. They called it hug watch was going on.
Yep.
And so everybody's nervous about this trade that's going on and just kind of feeding the rumor mill. You know, oh, Hansen's been dealt. Here we go. Let's see what we're getting back. Turns out, I think Pittsburgh was just playing a sick joke on everyone and decided just in the middle of the game to pull him and promoted him to AA. So,
yes. Well,
so no completed trade, just a promotion in the middle of the game.
Right. Well, and, you know, it is funny, though, because generally the 2 to 3 weeks before the trade deadline, there's no promotions within the minor league systems. Not only because of what happened, as soon as someone gets pulled from a game in the age of, you know, Twitter, everyone knows about it and the rumor mill goes crazy. But also, you know, if Alan Hansen has just 10 subpar at bats at the next level, it adds that question mark. You know, it really can only hurt his value if he goes up and struggles. So it's just strange that they did promote him, because most of the time around the trade deadline, it's just a complete moratorium on minor league promotions.
Yeah. I think it was just someone's really funny joke that they wanted to play. Someone's just down in the front office board. They're like, hey, let's give him a promotion now.
Seems like an odd time.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it on the Pittsburgh front. Let's move on to Cleveland, Jason. And what's going on with the Tribe?
Well, you know, the Indians, they have weathered their flat exit from the All-Star break and came back to sweep the Rangers over the weekend. They're, of course, all embroiled in the trade talk as well, although the performances lately from Scott Kazmir and Ubaldo have really just put a cork in the starting pitching rumors. Not to mention that Zach McAllister has shown that he's getting over the finger injury. His control, his first start back, was not there, but tonight he pitched much better. He's been throwing his curveball. So it looks like they're moving away from starting pitchers, which, of course, who would have thought that at the beginning of this year? You know, that at the trade deadline, the Indians would stand pat with their rotation. It looks like they're moving to bullpen help. And really, I think on that front, they're just focusing on left-handers. You know, they have quite a slew of talented right-handed relievers. We've seen some of them over the last month or so, guys like C.C. Lee and Preston Gilmett, Matt Langwell, Trey Haley's rehabbing really strong down in AA. I think some of them might get a shot here if guys like Brian Shaw, he has an option, or Matt Albers wear out their welcome. So they're looking at lefties, but, you know, again, we're talking about a trade market with outrageous demands. I mean, the White Sox just got a player to be named later for Jesse Crane, who's on the DL with a shoulder injury. I mean, that just, I don't know, it doesn't happen very often like that. If you're following it, you might have been a little disappointed that the Indians let Scott Downs, who's a left-handed reliever, slip away today to the Braves. But Downs is in the first year of a three-year, $15 million contract. So I think that is why why Chris Antonetti said, you know what, I think I'll pass on Scott Downs. Little pricey maybe, you know, when you take on that kind of a contract for a guy who's been used so heavily over his career and have to give up a prospect in return.
Right.
I think it's lefty relievers and a professional hitter. And I'm with you on the not giving up a lot for a guy that's a marginal improvement. And I think the Indians are facing even more of a hurdle maybe than the Pirates, because there's so few sellers right now, but one of the main sellers is the White Sox. And I would just be shocked if the White Sox are going to swing a deal with the Indians.
Right. That doesn't seem to make sense at all.
Right. And really, I think the Twins might sell some of their older players, and I don't think they're going to sell to the Indians either. So, not that I really long for Alex Rios or Justin Morneau because of what we'd have to give up to get them, but I just don't think that's even really an option. I think one of the guys who might be an option is Michael Young from the Phillies. The thing there is he is a free agent at the end of the year, but, you know, he could kind of slide into that Mark Reynolds role, where Mark Reynolds has just, I mean, you know he's not going to hit for average.
Right.
But it's really just gotten out of control. I saw a stat that he hasn't hit a double since May 15th.
Is the only reason that he's playing because of his contract, because he makes $6 million? I can't think of any other reason why they would keep trotting him out there when he's mired in a
bad. I think that's the reason they haven't taken more drastic action. This last week, he only played in two games. So, they are, you know, he's wearing out his welcome.
Yeah.
I think that contract is the only reason he probably hasn't been DFA'd. You know, because if a guy's making the minimum or like $1 million or $2 million and he's hitting like that, he's just going to be gone. I think the thing, of course, with Reynolds is he could just turn it on tomorrow and hit 9 home runs in a week.
You know what he needs for good inspiration is another nice solid ball right between the shoulder blades. That seemed to really get him pumped up last time.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I mean, we know Mark Reynolds doesn't take a walk, and I think he struck out, like, you know, 144 times already this year, or some ungodly number. He actually did get to play tonight, and he took 2 walks.
Hey, good for him.
Which is shocking.
Life is all about growth, man.
Yeah, he took 2 walks and lined out. And then he got pinch hit in the 9th inning, and Giambi had a walk-off home run in his place. But hey, you know, the little things, the little things.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's lots of rumors that the Indians are in on Josh Outman, and that is about the extent of the rumor mill. But that's pretty normal for the Indians. They don't, you know, nobody really knew they were a big player for Ubaldo until all of a sudden the deal was basically done. So... Right. We'll see what happens.
Well, let me ask you this. I had some questions about Cleveland's lineup because I heard the other day that Terry Francona said that he wasn't going to put Nick Swisher in the 2-hole.
Yeah, he explicitly said, I don't want to put Swisher in the 2-hole because basically I don't want Cabrera in the 4-hole. And I don't want to move Jason Kipnis out of the 3-hole because I like to get him in at bat in the first inning. Which... I think it's a good idea to let Jason Kipnis get as many at-bats as humanly possible. So
right.
I don't dispute that. But then about, I think it was 2 days after that, Terry Francona put Nick Swisher in the 2-hole and Asdrubal Cabrera in the 4-hole. And Swish has actually hit pretty well there. I think he benefits, you know, from batting in front of Kipnis. Asdrubal Cabrera, man, whew. He has looked just lost at the plate the whole year. I saw a stat that his plate discipline has just completely spiraled out of control. And if you watch some of the games, it's so obvious. He's walked 22 times and struck out 75.
Jeez.
And the thing is, his OPS is only 725. You know, it's like you can deal with... that kind of strikeout to walk if you're just bombing balls out of the park left and right.
Right.
But if you're not even at really replacement level, I mean, I guess for a shortstop he's at replacement level, but he looks lost. He just looks completely lost. He's had a nice week. He went 8-for-25 over the last week, but... He still looked lost. I saw him tonight getting at bat with runners in scoring position. He's swinging at balls in the dirt. And just he just makes me shake my head when I watch him. And we'll kind of come back to Cabrera when we talk about Lindor here in a moment. But the last major league note I want to mention is there's been a lot of talk about Michael Bourne, kind of like that he has a nice average. I think he's hitting actually 290, which is pretty high for Michael Bourne, really. But he has only stole 13 bases and been caught 8 times. And I think it's interesting, you know, everyone worries with a player like that when they get older, their speed, which is their main tool, is going to leave them. And, of course, everybody takes this as an example that that's what's happening to Bourne. I'm curious in the second half of the season when Michael Bourne sees some of these pitchers for a second or third time if he becomes a better base stealer. You know, he spent his entire career in the National League. He's been thrown into the American League with pitchers and catchers he's not familiar with. And when he gets on base pretty much any time after the 6th inning in a close game, he's just expected to steal. Everyone knows he's going to steal.
Right.
And the Indians really, you know, have kind of skipped over the Central a lot. They're kind of in this schedule where for the rest of the way, they're going to play their own division quite a bit. So it'll be interesting if he becomes a better base dealer as he sees, you know, Justin Verlander and, Drew Smyly and all those guys for a second or third time. just an interesting point.
That'll definitely be, yeah, something, because that is an area where you can improve, definitely, base stealing.
Right.
You know, the Pirates have seen it with Andrew McCutchen, just getting better reads, better jumps. That really, really helps you in stealing your bases.
Right.
Now, let's talk about the farm system, because you guys have actually quite a few solid players down on the farm that are progressing or have progressed into major league talent. And specifically talking about Danny Salazar, who came up and made a spot start for the Tribe. So what's been going on with Danny Salazar?
Yeah, Danny Salazar had a banner week. He had two starts where he put up, in combined total, 17 strikeouts against one walk with no runs and six hits. He only went 9 innings in those two starts also. It's important to add. So he struck out 17 in 9 innings.
Running up a little pitch count there, huh?
Well, actually the opposite. He was pulled from one of those games at 75 pitches. He is coming back from Tommy John, and they're still really babying him. So they have a pitch count that actually is pretty low because they pulled him at 75. Nobody's getting hits. Nobody's scoring runs off Danny Salazar. So it'll be interesting to see how they transition him to the majors. You know, are they going to let him come up and work out of the bullpen because they're babying him so much? Is he not going to fill a spot in this rotation? Maybe there isn't even a spot for him to fill. I don't know. It'll be interesting. And then Trevor Bauer, the oft-criticized Trevor Bauer, actually has put up two good starts also. He pitched a complete game, which is a shock for many people. Trevor Bauer pitched a complete game. July 22nd, he pitched a complete game, gave up 2 runs against Buffalo, 4 strikeouts and 4 walks. And then a few days ago, he pitched 5 innings, gave up 1 earned run, 3 runs total, but 1 earned, and 3 walks and 2 strikeouts. So over his last 2 starts, he's had pretty good outings. And I'd like to report he has reverted back to the windup.
All right.
So whatever that was about, he's pitching out of the windup again. But then Francisco Lindor was promoted to Akron about 2 weeks ago. He's gone 16-49 at the plate, which is a .381 average. 1 homer, 7 RBIs, 1.05 OPS, and walked 10 times and struck out only once. Now, this is interesting because in Carolina, he walked 35 times and struck out 39. So he is a very disciplined hitter, and he's carrying that with him, you know, thus far in Akron. Really, you know, this has only accelerated his timetable. I think originally people thought he would be up at the end of next year. But if he continues this, you know, I wouldn't be surprised for him to be up before the All-Star break next year. You know,
you wouldn't feel too bad about an Asdrubal Cabrera trade, would you?
Right. Coming back to my frustration with Asdrubal Cabrera, I wouldn't be surprised if that Cardinals Cabrera trade is finally consummated, maybe in the offseason, but it finally is finished, and Mike Avila starts the year as the starting shortstop and kind of helps Lindor not be overexposed in the early going.
You know what? Quite frankly, I don't think there's that much that Mike Avila can help Francisco Lindor with. I think it's
I think it can help him to not be overexposed at the plate,
yeah,
in the beginning.
Just
because, you know, we all see those guys like the Yasiel Puig who come up and have a great month, and then pitchers are like, oh yeah, actually if you throw him this pitch, he can't hit that. So there will be that adjustment period, I'm sure. And just having a serviceable backup that you can rely on, I think, will help. And I think I would be surprised if Lindor starts next year as the starting shortstop, too. I think they will let him get some AAA experience next year. So that's where Avilas will come in also. But Francisco Lindor continuing to move up the ranks, you know, and when you envision this Francisco Lindor, Jason Kipnis middle infield, just makes you happy inside.
How excited does that make you?
I mean, you know, and then I do want to mention this, actually. I guess it's minor league related. Apparently, Tito said, this is kind of a telling comment, that Yan Gomes, who is hitting .283 on the year so far, putting up a good stats and demonstrating a lot of ability, you know, defensively also, that Yan Gomes will one day be an everyday catcher.
One day, huh?
One day. Does he mean like one day from today? Does he mean...
There's a lot of interpretations about that, huh?
I mean, because I can really, you know, I think we talk a lot about getting another professional at bat in this lineup. While Nick Swisher is a much better first baseman than Carlos Santana, much, much better. What does it do to the lineup if you put Nick Swisher back in right field, let Carlos Santana do this kind of first base DH mixture and let Yan Gomes catch every day?
I like it. I support it. I love Yan Gomes. That kid can mash.
I like it too. And I like the Mark Reynolds getting less playing time and Mike Avilas and Ryan Rayburn getting more, because what Ryan Rayburn's put up this year is absolutely outstanding for the limited amount of time he's gotten to play.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm assuming that means that you are you're backing off a little bit on the Mark Reynolds sign him to a contract position.
Just to be fair, I was imagining him continuing that.
Yeah.
I didn't mean sign him to that extension at that very moment.
Right, yeah.
I meant like
maybe at the end of the season.
The whole year, you know.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, unequivocally, yes, I'm backing off of that. Although I think we're often too quick to judge, but it has been since May 15th, so I think the too quick to judge stage may have passed.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sample size. Oh, the ongoing saga of Mark Reynolds destroying your lineup productivity.
Yeah, like, I mean, I would be completely happy with letting Mike Avilas DH every day. I guess we don't want to do that because he's our middle infielder, so our backup middle infielder, so let's let Ryan Rayburn DH every day.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. I'd rather have Jason Giambi be out there every day right now.
That is a sad state of affairs.
The Giambino.
The great Giambino.
I will, in closing, because when you give someone a hard time, it's only fair to point out when they're successful. Since returning from the disabled list, Chris Perez has posted a .64 ERA and only allowed one run in 14 innings and has saved 8 games and blown none.
Here's the best part. He's not in jail, so that's good.
That's definitely a positive. I can't argue that.
Biggest positive there. All right, well, let's move on to the Erie Seawolves. We want to give the Seawolves a quick shout-out. If you haven't been paying attention to the Seawolves, right now, Mascot Mania is going on in minor league baseball, where you, as a fan, can go vote for your favorite mascot. I love this kind of stuff, by the way. This social media, like, rah-rah, go out and support your team for whatever it is. I don't care if it's, like, the favorite food in the stadium or the favorite mascot or whoever. But if you log on to minorleaguebaseball.com, MILB.com, you can go vote for your favorite mascot there. You can also tweet on Twitter. If you follow MILB on Twitter and you tweet the hashtag MascotMania and include the Twitter handle of the team whose mascot you want to vote for, then that'll count as a vote as well. Retweets count also in this contest. So I'm kind of hoping that Seawolf, our good friend Seawolf, makes it into the finals or the next round or however this tournament is going to pan out. So if you're a citizen of Erie, go vote for Seawolf. Give him a vote. The Eastern League, he'll be in the Eastern League mascot section. There's some goofy mascots on there, man. It was fun. I was looking at it today. There's some trippy mascots on there.
Yeah, well, you know, that happens in the minor leagues.
I love minor league baseball. Yeah, you've got all kinds of weird stuff as your mascot. The Seawolves are actually, they're on the road in Reading, and then they'll be heading to New Britain this weekend before they come back to Erie next week. Tuesday, they'll be home to play Trenton. Following that, they'll be playing Binghamton. So if you want to get out and see any of those clubs playing the Seawolves, if you just want to go see some baseball, I strongly urge you to get up to the UTT. It's a howl of a good time, and you get to see some good baseball. August 16th to the 18th, the Seawolves are home against Altoona, which typically I would love to go see a couple games from that series anyways, but I'm even more excited now that there are potentially games that will feature Gregory Polanco, Alex Dickerson, Alan Hansen, and potentially Jameson Taillon.
Oh, man.
That's a pretty good roster coming from the Big Tuna there.
You know what else? By that point, Brian Wilson could be in a Pirates uniform on a rehab assignment.
Wouldn't that be exciting? That just tickles me pink.
The beard.
Fear the beard. Last thing about the Seawolves, if you've been paying attention to Hernan Perez, he's still up and he's actually playing fairly well in Detroit. He's earned the majority of the playing time at second base over the 12 games that he's appeared in. He has 31 at-bats, 9 hits, which is good for a .290 average. He's only walked once. He's K'd 7 times, which is good for a .303 on-base percentage. But, you know, he's holding his own up there. He defensively, you know, he's amazing. So he's a player that's a lot of fun to watch because of the flash that you get from the leather on the field. So make sure you pay attention next time that you see Detroit on for the little second baseman out there, Hernan Perez.
Now, you might not know the answer to this, but let's just say hypothetically that Johnny Peralta gets suspended.
Yeah, just, I mean, that
hypothetically.
That's a good possibility. You know, I hadn't really thought about that, but Perez, and I'll go back and double check this, but I'm pretty sure he started quite a few games at shortstop this year as well.
Yeah, I would be surprised if a young, you know, strong defensive second baseman isn't able to fill in at shortstop. That might come any day.
Yeah, they're talking about it coming up sometime this week.
You know, hypothetically, of course.
Right, naturally, hypothetically, that could happen. So yeah, that'd definitely be something to keep an eye on, whether they could slide Hernan Perez over or you know, at least keep him up and give him that full-time gig at second base.
Yeah, I mean, all right, well, somebody's going to have to play.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's got to get those at-bats. Jason, it's my favorite time of the podcast where I get to step up on my soapbox.
J.R. House.
Oh, boy.
Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off. Ooh!
Kind of a grit guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano!
So, today, on my soapbox, I want to talk about... I'm on it. I'm actually, you can't see me because this isn't a video, but I'm actually on my soapbox in my apartment.
In your living room?
In my living room watching Kent Tekulve talk about the Pirates game. I want to talk about...
What an image.
I'm in my underwear while I'm doing it, if that helps paint an image as well.
Wow.
He
took a turn. Can I remind you that we have a clean rating on iTunes?
A turn for the... Now we have a sexy rating on iTunes.
Whoa.
Hey, so
move back, on, please.
Back on point. Now that I'm on my soapbox in my underwear watching Kent Tekulve, runners in scoring position. It's been a point of contention for the Pirates all season long. They haven't hit with runners in scoring position. I don't even know what the statistic is at now, but there was a point where they hadn't hit a sacrifice fly since like May 7th or something crazy like that. So it really got me thinking and I started asking questions and talking to people who'd, you know, played baseball professionally and at competitive levels and listened to a lot of analysis on what people say about runners in the scoring position. And basically you get two different camps where you have people who say hitting with runners in scoring position is a fluky thing. It's a luck-based thing. It has nothing to do with any particular skill that you have. And then there's other people that say hitting with runners in scoring position is absolutely different from hitting with the, you know, a runner on first or the bases empty. And the more that I talked to people about it, it seemed like it was the people who actually played baseball that said that hitting with runners in scoring position is different. And it seemed more like the people who analyze baseball, like the Keith Laws of the world, say that hitting with runners in scoring position is not a skill. It's completely luck-based. And so that got me thinking, when you're making adjustments to your swing, because that's the big thing that I got from the people that actually played baseball. One of my good friends played baseball at the University of North Carolina. He went on to play in the independent leagues for a few years. And he said he absolutely made adjustments when there were runners in scoring position to his swing because he knew the pitchers were going to make adjustments to how they pitched to him. And it's not something that you can measure sabermetrically, but if you have players that are telling you that they're approaching an at-bat differently when there's runners in scoring position than they are when the bases are empty or there's a runner on first, isn't that, I mean, isn't that a skill? Do you agree with me on this? Where are you at on this? Do you have an opinion on this?
I have an opinion. I recognize that, you know, the players approach the at-bats differently when there's runners in scoring position. I guess my thing is, it seems like teams vary wildly in their effectiveness in it, even from year to year or game to game. So to me, that leads me toward thinking that it is just a luck-based thing. And I'm pulling up, this is kind of just, it's not the same stat that you're talking about exactly. It's actually runners left in scoring position, like the amount of runners left in scoring position per game. And it's kind of interesting because no one is under 3 and everyone's under 4. And when you look at, it goes back to 2007. And while the teams change, like Houston leaves the least amount of runners in scoring position this year, probably because they put the least amount in scoring position, they leave on average 3.07 per game. Well, in 2012, Toronto left the fewest amount in scoring position, and it was 3.04. And in 2011, it was Baltimore, 3.2, so that was a little high. 2010, Toronto again, 3.9, or 3.09. So it just kind of looks like there isn't much variation in it, though, from a stat-based outcome anyway. Although I get what you're saying, you know, that adjustment that a hitter might make, there's no way to measure that.
Right. I mean, I understand, and it's not that I can't wrap my head around what analysts like Keith Law are saying, you know, oh yeah, it's completely luck-based. I get that. I understand Alan Craig hitting like 500 with runners in scoring position this season isn't going to continue for the rest of his career. But I think there's a point where you just have to be willing to accept there's some things in baseball you can't measure. And if players are telling you that they're making these adjustments and pitchers are making these adjustments with runners in scoring position, at some point, isn't it somewhat skill-based with runners in scoring position? If they're telling you that that's what they're doing, that's their approach is changing. And you have a large enough sample size to look at it, maybe not one season, but maybe you look over a whole career, like Derek Jeter's whole career. Is he going to be more clutch with runners in scoring position? I hate to use the word clutch because that's another thing that, you know, sabermetricians do. Oh, the clutch doesn't exist. I get it.
I was gonna ask you that because, you know, it's kind of a similar argument.
Right. But I mean, maybe it is a skill if there's people that are just better that understand, you know, maybe they're players that typically work the count a little bit deeper. Well, hey, when I get that first fastball with a runner in scoring position, maybe I jump on it here instead.
Well, and I think it would be interesting, you know, take a player like Derek Jeter, who isn't a power focused player, a power-centric player, we might say. Maybe he does have better numbers with runners in scoring position because the shorten up and try and go the other way that a lot of times is required with runners in scoring position, maybe that's Derek Jeter's more natural approach. You see what I'm saying?
So right, yeah. I mean,
so he's more successful in that situation, whereas if you ask Mark Reynolds to shorten up and go the other way, no, that doesn't work. So Mark Reynolds' approach at all times is me hit ball hard.
Hulk smash.
And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, whereas if you take a player over his career, like, say, an Ichiro, who has traditionally had a high batting average, you know, is he more successful with runners in scoring position compared to other players with lower batting averages? That would be an interesting thing to look at also.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's something, there's not a whole lot of information out there to look at, but I think it's just, it almost seems foolish to me for someone to say there's absolutely zero skill involved with hitting with runners in scoring position when you have baseball players that tell you that we hit differently when there's runners in scoring position.
But I guess the flip side of that is, so if, you know, a guy who didn't make it to the major leagues but was in a D1 program is telling you those were the adjustments he was making, would it be fair to say that everyone on the major league roster is trying to make those same adjustments, so it's not really a skill, that's just the standard approach?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that could be a way to look at that,
But again, maybe some players are better at changing to that approach than others.
Exactly, and, you know, like I said, leading off this little soapbox of mine, there's no real way to measure it. You can't. And I think that's really what bothers the statistically minded people. I mean, you really can't measure someone's approach at the plate. You could look at their hands, maybe see if they choke up, but you literally would have to be talking to them after every at bat to find out what they did in order to measure it. And you can't do it.
Right.
So, and I, you know, like I said, I completely understand there's not a lot of, you know, like Alan Craig isn't going to hit 500 with runners in scoring position his whole career. There's some luck involved. There's some fluctuation that's just going to naturally occur. But I think it's just foolish to completely discount it as, oh, well, you know, whatever's going to happen in a typical at-bat's going to happen with runners in scoring position. Because right. I think there could be adjustments that hitters make that kind of separate them from other players. Like you said, Mark Reynolds probably doesn't do a whole lot of adjusting when there's runners on first and second, or runners on first, or no runners on. It's probably a very similar approach, I would think.
Right. So,
I don't know. Just something to gnaw on, I guess. Something to think about. Get your little baseball juices flowing, if you will. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today. We had no Dr. Garrett, no Bob in the house, so just the two of us. I think Will Smith summed that up, so go listen to that song. That's best. Yep. How I feel about our time together. I don't know why Will Smith popped into my head there.
Taking a turn.
So we'd like to thank our listeners if you managed to stick it out with us the whole way through. If you're listening to us on iTunes, give us a rate and review. We haven't had one of those for a while. We'd love one. They help drive our popularity up. I'd like some more listeners. I don't know about you.
Yeah, always.
So a big thanks again to our listeners. If you want to check us out on the interwebs, you can at www.tsmbaseball.com. If you want to drop us an email, you can at tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Really give it up in just one shot.